Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 10th episode of the series of podcasts with IEEE Electron Devices Society Luminaries. As the world's largest professional organization, IEEE plays a significant role to enhance the quality of our life. Electron Devices Society, or EDS, encompasses activities involving electron devices, the main enabler for today's digital world. I'm Mohammad Mustafa Hussein, the professor of electrical engineering and computer science of University of California, Berkeley. I play a variety of roles in different capacities within the Electron Devices Society of IEEE. In this series of podcasts, we will be interviewing those EDS members who have made remarkable impacts in our society through their innovations and dedication. Our guest today is someone who is an accomplished researcher, educator, and administrator. Yes, we are going to discuss today with Professor Suje King Liu of University of California, Berkeley. Suje King Liu was born in Ithaca, New York, and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area. She earned her bachelor's, master's, and PhD degrees in electrical engineering at Stanford University in 1984, 1986, and 1994, respectively. She was a scientist at the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center, PARC, before joining the UC Berkeley faculty in 1996 in the Department of Electrical Engineering and Computer Science, EECS. Liu is internationally known in academia and industry for her innovations in semiconductor devices and technology, and is highly regarded for her achievements as an instructor, mentor, and administrator. She is a fellow of the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineering, IEEE, an elected member of the United States National Academy of Engineering, a fellow of the National Academy of Inventors, and a board member for Intel Corporation. Among her awards are the Ross M. Tucker AIME Electronics Materials Award for seminal work in polycrystalline silicon germanium thin films, and NSF Carrier Award for research in thin film transistor technology, the Intel Outstanding Researcher in Nanotechnology Award, the IEEE Eldert van der Ziel Award for Distinguished Educational and Research Contributions to the Field of Electronic Devices and Materials, and the DARPA Significant Technical Achievement Award for her role in the development of the FinFET, an advanced transistor design used in high-end computer chips. In addition to excelling in research, Liu has demonstrated a strong commitment to enhancing the educational experience of students. Her dedication earned Liu the Electrical Engineering Division Outstanding Teaching Award, UC Berkeley Distinguished Faculty Mentoring Award, and the Semiconductor Research Corporation Aristotle Award. How are you doing today?
Doing very well, thank you. How are you doing, Mohammed?
I'm doing fine, and it has always been a pleasure to talk to you. So my first question is, it will start from the very beginning. If you can kindly share about your childhood, any fond memories, like, you know, anything that you have done, you think like now, look back and see, like, and think, I should not have done that, something like that.
All right. Well, thanks for giving me the opportunity to share a little bit about my life journey and career path. So my childhood, I was born in the United States. My parents immigrated from Taiwan, and they met as graduate students at Cornell University. And after they got married, then I was born. So I was their first child, and I grew up in a Mandarin Chinese speaking household. So when I first went to school, I remember that I really didn't know much English. And in fact, I distinctly remember being put into a remedial class with other slower students because I couldn't communicate well in English. But I did learn pretty quickly and, attended regular class, I think, you know, in kindergarten. But, I do remember that it took a while to not only learn the language, but a lot of the customs, the cultures, you know, Christmas, the Christmas carols that I wasn't familiar with, but everybody knew how to sing when I was in kindergarten. So I had a happy childhood, thanks to my parents, you know, very loving and supportive family and home. But I do remember, difficulties of being a minority, right? Just different culture, different language. And of course, there's bias and discrimination that I did experience growing up in the San Francisco Bay Area. Back then, you know, 50 years ago, it was not nearly as diverse as it is today. And I appreciate that because today, you know, in engineering, we are trying to foster more inclusion and belonging for reasons that we can discuss later. And I can therefore relate, I think, to a lot of the challenges or difficulties that minoritized members of our community face. But generally, I had a happy childhood growing up. I actually enjoyed playing sports quite a bit as a child. So, you know, in the old days, then I would have been classified as a tomboy. But I remember like recess was my favorite time of school because I could go out and play, you know, basketball or soccer or something on the field, you know. And oftentimes I probably was the only girl on the court or on the field, but that didn't really bother me. But I think just in growing up enjoying team sports, you know, engineering is a great team sport in my view. You know, it's just a lot of joy, you know, a satisfaction in accomplishing a common goal with a group of people and celebrating together. I also enjoyed music. My parents did sort of force me to learn multiple musical instruments, but, you know, music certainly is a source of, you know, emotional, you know, reward, I would say, right? When you can play some music that actually sounds good, but also I enjoyed playing as a part of groups. So orchestra, I was part of an orchestra in elementary school and through high school, that was very enjoyable. I was part of a jazz band. So I played the violin and orchestra, jazz band was, you know, keyboards. And so I enjoyed, you know, those experiences, you know, making beautiful music together to really bring joy to others, right? Seeing the response of the audience, that was very rewarding. So generally, I always enjoyed being part of something bigger than myself. That's just looking back. I was very, very shy. And one of my second grade student actually told my mother that I was painfully shy because I had never spoke up in class and I just tried not to be noticed, except on, you know, during recess on the field or the basketball court. So I think the fact that I enjoyed being part of a team, accomplishing things together, but not really having any attention paid to myself because I was an introvert, that's kind of how I grew up. And that still shapes the way I work with people today.
Well, a lot of very insightful information, right? Like, yeah, as you know, that in the recent past, after the tragic event of some of the, like, you know, the women of the Korean origin, they were assassinated, right? Now, this month, we are celebrating the Heritage Month for the Asian American and Pacific Islanders. And please share us with your college life, as well as, like, you know, the you went for the graduate school. If I'm not that much wrong, then both of them, they were in Stanford University.
That's right. That's right.
Right. So yeah, Stanford, let's talk about that.
Yes, at Stanford, I majored in electrical and engineering. And I think, you know, looking back, I probably was the only woman in my engineering classes. I did have friends outside of engineering who were women. And I was still shy, of course, and it was just difficult for me to really work together, or I just was too shy to reach out and collaborate or study together and work together on projects with my classmates. So I was pretty much isolated, and that gave me some imposter syndrome. So when I was close to graduating with the bachelor's degree, I didn't have confidence that I knew enough, that I had enough technical skills to get a good job as an engineer. And so for that reason, I stayed for a fifth year to earn a Master of Science degree. And when I was a master's student, I helped to support myself by serving as a teaching assistant. And I enjoyed teaching very much. And at that time, I also got to know some PhD students who were doing research. It just so happened that the PhD students I met were working in the area of, you know, solid state devices, semiconductor devices and technology. And so I thought, wow, that looks really exciting, very impactful, right? I mean, semiconductors, if we think about the impact that information and communication technology has had on society, you know, something that you can make a big impact. Again, achieving something great, but your part is pretty small that nobody really ever sees, right? So I thought, no, that was appealing. And that's how I ended up just staying on and pursuing a PhD. It's really just seeing the excitement of other PhD students working in research. It's like that attracted me to stay. And maybe I was just postponing, you know, going to work and, you know, in getting a real job. But it turned out well for me. I enjoyed the research, continued to do some teaching. And I was just really fortunate to have that opportunity that it just turned out I was at Stanford already. And Stanford is a leading university still in the area of semiconductor devices and technology. So it worked out well for me.
Very interesting, because one of the questions that I was planning for you, and I have asked this question to others, that like what, you know, that a person like yourself would have excelled in other fields also, but you chose electron devices. I think you already responded, like, you know, that how you became interested about that. But my question then will be, if it was not electron devices, now being the dean and knowing a lot of the fields in engineering and beyond that, what would have been your second choice?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I hadn't thought of that. My second choice? Hard to say. I think electrical engineering, electronic engineering is rather broad, actually. So I specialize in the area of semiconductor devices, but electrical engineering, you know, is pretty broad. Like there's robotics, there's you know, control systems, there's information systems, you know, networks and so on. So I'd say maybe I wouldn't have been so adventurous, but some other fields within electrical engineering probably would have been just as attractive to me, I would say.
Yeah, obviously we know about your passion, passion about the overall the electrical engineering.
What I like about engineering is that it's applied, right? You can see the benefit to humankind or society. Studying pure science was fine, but you know, just pursuing knowledge for the sake of understanding how the world works and how people work and so on, that's been useful to me as a teacher and as a leader. But I wanted to make or design and build things, you know, to actually make a positive difference in society. So I think that's why, in general, I'd like engineering. And different types of engineering, I think, would all be appealing to me as well.
Yeah, I think that helps the overall fundamental science to make the connection with everyone, right? Engineering is the bridge to reach out to the people. Whatever that we build, whatever we do, all the developments that eventually directly impacts the society, obviously. Your first job, if I do remember, you started in industry, I think in Xerox PARC?
Yes. That was my first permanent job. I did if you want to take this question literally, my very first job was a piano teacher. When I was in high school, I did piano to young children to earn a little bit of, you know, spending money. And as a student, I did have summer internships working at Texas Instruments and then Hewlett-Packard and I've forgotten, and IBM as well. Yes.
Right.
But yeah, Xerox Palo Alto Research Center, I was blessed to have an opportunity to work there when it was still, a time of great, flexibility and, you know, exploring new technologies. I got to work on thin film transistor technology that's used for flat panel displays today. And, you know, these are ubiquitous today, right? In our smartphones and our digital watches and and the laptop computers and desktop monitors and so on. Back then, in 30 years ago, it was still these large CRT displays that were prevalent, and flat panel displays were not really, they were relatively expensive. But today, it's amazing how much progress there has been made in information display technology. I had the opportunity to learn about, you know, the vision science, like how the visual system works in the humans and how to design information displays that you know, like present information, whether or not it's video or just graphics, you know, in a realistic or lifelike way. And I learned a lot. I just enjoyed learning and enjoyed learning, continuing to learn when I was at Xerox PARC, not only about transistor technology, but just about displays and you know, human visual system.
Right. I think, like, you know, that you are one of the few experts, the leading authorities in the solid state electronics area who has worked on the thin-film technology for display, on the microelectromechanical systems or MEMS, then the high performance, the logic transistors, the memory devices using a very novel architecture and physics, the nanoelectromechanical systems, your innovation, memory. That not everyone has that opportunity to work on the every single aspect of, like, you know, the device technology and contribute to each of them distinctively. That's quite unique. But I must say that it seems to me that your fascination for music came up quite frequently, and hopefully when the pandemic is no more there, hopefully more contained, in one of the departmental retreats or College of Engineering retreats, we will make an official request for you to actually play something. That would be a fantastic surprise.
Yes, I did, you know, once give a solo recital when I was 14 years old, but I think, you know, that was 40 something years ago, so it's not going to be anything like that ever again, I'm afraid. But I prefer to be playing as part of a group, right? So if we get a group of people together, I'm perfectly happy to play keyboards or whatever, you know, as part of that group.
Or sing. Sure. Yeah. Okay. We'll figure out people.
Thank you.
We'll have a team. So because I already mentioned, like, you know, the multiple of the device technologies that you have worked on, did you ever feel that you had eureka moment, or they just came naturally? How do you put it?
You know, I always like to connect the dots. So as I go through life, you know, I get to meet all kinds of interesting people and learn about what they're doing. And it's all about connecting the dots. So we are pursuing or trying to tackle a specific technical challenge, sort of just bringing together what I've learned from different people over time. And sometimes it's over many years that some idea or, you know, technology might have some application to a new problem. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, accumulating knowledge, finding a good way to remember or to archive information. So I always tell my students, when you read a paper, you know, you don't have to read every single word and every single figure and so on. Sort of scan it, scan the title, look at who's working, who's doing this work, so you can always remember. If you want to look up some, like, the state of the art, you can look up you know, publications by that group. Remember, like, where the work was published and the key figures, so that later on, if you are thinking about some new problem, you can more easily recall, okay, like, which group and what paper actually is relevant to this current problem. So I think a lot of the success I've had that you outlined in the past really is because I've been working in this field for many years now, accumulated a lot of knowledge over the years, and just putting pieces together to come up with new innovations to solve the problem at hand. And working on transistors, got experience in materials and processes, and then, you know, working on memory devices, well, they require materials, novel materials and processes as well, but for different application and therefore different performance requirements. So it's just, I think my professional, you know, technical career is just naturally evolving, you know, from building on everything I've learned to date, to apply my knowledge and skills to the new problems that are, you know, outside of my experience, but sort of related enough that I can make a contribution. And that also helps to make the work interesting, right? You don't really want to work on the same kind of problem for too long. It gets boring. I think we can set up organizational structures that encourage, you know, cross-disciplinary or interdisciplinary collaboration. I think that's a good way to do it with today's, you know, within today's organizational frameworks. Yes.
Right. So among the different things that you have worked on, is there any specific one that that is more closer to your heart?
Well, you know, my view is that my all of my technical accomplishments would not have been possible without many people with whom I, you know, from whom I learned and with whom I worked, and, you know, the hard work of the students who worked in the lab, right, and under my guidance and mentorship. So I personally don't take pride in specific technical accomplishments that I've achieved, because it's a team effort. But in terms of things that I find to be especially rewarding are really the students, the graduates. And oftentimes it takes many years for a student to realize that something that they learned from me was actually useful. But it's very nice when they come back to me, usually many years later, to express appreciation for something they learned from me, or even just a talk that I gave that gave them some ideas or showed them that they actually, as a, let's say, a female in engineering, could actually, you know, succeed and become a leader. So I think it's really the things that have been really rewarding to me are just hearing back from former students that they really, you know, appreciated something that I did for them, whether or not it was a lecture or a class or, you know, mentoring them through, you know, a PhD program. Those are the things that make this job worthwhile. Success in for engineers, I think, is really measured by the impact you have had on people's lives, the positive impact that you've had. And so I think as a teacher, instructor, or professor, we are really privileged to directly impact many students in our careers. But then those students go on and impact, you know, additional students or other people through their work, you know, depending on their profession. So it truly is a very impactful responsibility, actually. And so we have to be careful how we are educating students, because these people will go on to be future leaders, you know, people who will shape our world literally as engineers.
Right.
And so we need to make sure we're educating people who will be inclusive, you know, considerate of all members of society, their needs, but also equitable, right, and ethical. And so these are serious responsibilities that before I became an administrative leader, I didn't really think about so much. But, you know, it's kind of obvious once you think about it. It's like, oh, we need to make sure that these students are not only very capable technically, but that they think about societal implications, you know, ethics and sustainability, you know, things like this.
So now I will actually switch a little bit some of the lighthearted questions that we have that's very popular with our younger audience. And then I'll go back to the last segment where we will try to actually get your vision about the future. What are your hobbies?
Well, you shouldn't be surprised, sports and music, you know, playing music. But nowadays, you don't have much time to do that, being in Zoom meetings all day. But I love animals as well. And so we have multiple pets in our home. So they force us to take them on walks, wake up early, and so on. So I really enjoy spending time with, you know, family and our pets. We have three dogs in our family and two rabbits, although it's really down to one rabbit right now that we're keeping in our home.
Okay. Oh, well, there is a new dog now, right? Because the last time we talked, like, you had two.
Yes, we have a couple of rescue dogs in our home. Yes, okay. They're rescued from Taiwan.
Okay.
Yes, actually, recently, because of the pandemic, we ended up just subscribing to Netflix. And so I have been watching a lot of movies on Netflix in recent months. Yeah.
Okay, very good. So what genre of movies you like?
You know, for me, I like movies that have happy endings. That's all I can say.
Okay.
And actually, I like watching movies that are based on real life, right? Okay. Learning, yeah. having, seeing inspirational stories of how people have overcome challenges and, you know, against all odds and so on. Because it's just inspirational to me. I'd like to feel good and inspired after watching, you know, spending 2 hours watching a movie.
That's right. So, you know, that your fascination for music. So do you have any preference for any specific kind of music?
You know, thinking back now, I think I actually like the pop music from the 80s, because that's kind of when I was my teenage, you know, formative years. It just helps to bring back memories, fond memories of those years. But also, I find that those songs from that age, that decade, are more cheerful. And so, you know, music, I think it's just good to sort of find ways to cheer your soul, right? And I mean, it's just...
What is the book you are reading now?
Well, I start multiple books and don't necessarily finish them before, you know, running the next one. It's interesting because I'm on the board of directors for Intel. Our new CEO, you know, he has written some books. And so he gave each of us a complimentary autographed copy of his book, The Juggling Act, Bringing Balance to Your Faith, Family, and Work. And so I've started to read that. I think it's very insightful. And then as far as a fiction book, there's in the College of Engineering at Berkeley, we're trying to encourage students to read fiction because it helps to improve, you know, mental and emotional well-being. So the book that one of the books for our community that we have made available for free to read online is titled How Long Till Black Future Month. It's written by a young African-American author, N.K. Jemison. I've started reading that book, but I haven't gotten too far. But it's interesting. So science fiction stories sort of making you think about issues pertaining to race.
What is your favorite cuisine?
I have to say it's actually Chinese cuisine. I grew up, you know, in a Chinese family and had enjoyed good Chinese food every day. And then when I went away to college, eating in the dorms, I thought it was great to be able to eat so-called American food, right? Steaks and pizza and so on. And I really enjoyed that as a college student. But now as an adult, it's like, I actually prefer, I don't know, maybe it's just the cultural thing. I just prefer Chinese food now. And having traveled to different regions of China, including, you know, Hong Kong and Taiwan. I mean, the food, there's just so much delicious food there, different varieties. Different ways to enjoy the same vegetables and meat. I think Chinese cuisine is my favorite.
Do you recommend any restaurant in the Bay Area?
No, I mean, there's some places that my family goes to when we go to visit Chinatown in San Francisco or Oakland that they have, you know, inexpensive but tasty food, but it's probably equivalent to junk food, you know, like Chinese junk food, just for, you know, a treat once in a while. But, you know, there is the Fortune Cookie Factory, right, in San Francisco. And the novelty nowadays. But, yeah, it's just fun places. We like to have fun, including when we're eating.
What is your favorite sports now?
Well, you know, my favorite sport to play still is basketball. Enjoy that. But, you know, my husband, after he got married, he enjoys watching sports just as much as playing sports. And so I've learned to enjoy spectating sports. So before the pandemic, we went regularly to the Oakland A's, you know, baseball games and enjoyed that. So yeah, baseball is fun to watch, as is basketball. Yeah.
Okay. So, he is a very jolly person. I had an opportunity to meet with him, and so I'm sure that, like, you know, that it's always fun to go with him and to watch.
He explains all the strategies, it's quite interesting, right? If you were just simply watching the sport, watching the action on the field, it might get boring. But if you understand all the strategies that's going on, the, how you choose the players to put into the game, depending on the pitcher and whether or not to steal a base. Yeah, it's just a lot of interesting things that go into a game in order to increase your chances of winning.
Okay. You have been in many places around the world. What is your favorite travel spot?
Well, after traveling to many places in the world, I think California is a beautiful place to live. There's so many places to go that are within just a few hours drive. So, right. But if I would say Hawaii is good because my husband and I went there for our honeymoon. So there's some sentimental, you know, attachment there.
Okay, so we are in the last segment of our conversation, and we'll be asking you some questions about, like, you know, the kind of the future. So my first question in that line is, what is your thought about the electronics in future?
Well, I think that electronics will continue to proliferate as the dependence and, you know, applications of information and communication technology continues to grow. So I think it is time for us to be more thoughtful about aspects such as security, right? We see a lot of concern now, people are able to hack, you know, even hardware, right? So I think we have to be more thoughtful about the potential unintended negative consequences of the technologies, the electronic devices that we are developing today. But I think electronics will always grow. I mean, and the sources of energy to power the electronics are diversifying, right? So there's a lot of innovation in scavenging of energy from the environment and storage of energy. So I think we have enough power in the world, whether or not it's solar or, you know, wind or hydro or fossil fuel. I mean, just a combination, nuclear, plenty of power to power as many electronic devices as the world wants, you know, in the foreseeable future. So yeah, I think it's an exciting field to work in, and lots of room for innovations continuing.
Right. So you said about, like, you know, the energy storage, energy harvesting, definitely the secured electronics. Is there any application that does not exist today, but you would like to see it happening?
Well, I think it's quite impressive to me when we watch movies. We were talking about movies earlier. So, you know, let's say the creators of Star Trek, you know, decades ago, right? The kinds of things that they imagined, like the holodeck. and today, watching movies like the Marvel, you know, superheroes, right. Iron Man. I mean, the technologies that they imagine that people use in the future are, like, I think a normal engineer, at least if I'm normal, we wouldn't have even imagined. But these creative artists, right, the people who write stories and you know, illustrate or you know, graphically can create on their computers these scientific science fiction futures. I think you can look there to see all kinds of things that don't exist. A lot of technologies don't exist today, but a lot of those things would be useful to have.
Right.
I still a long time, we're not quite yet able to realize a Dick Tracy watch, right? That was imagined by cartoonists, you know, a long time ago, right? And so right. I think we can look to for inspiration from the people in the society who are more artistic and creative, perhaps, than engineers.
Right. In MIT, they offered in one semester a graduate course, which was about read a science fiction novel and take one of the interesting things which does not exist today and try to build it in the next semester. And it was really wonderful. I think, like, you know, that at that point, the unconscious bias of the artificial intelligence technology, that they recognize more the Caucasian faces than the other colored faces. Mm-hmm. That came out because of that course. So this is something, like, you know, we may want to actually, like, you know, work with our students to bring their imagination collectively and let them work on it, like, you know, with a free-spirited manner, something like that. That would be wonderful, like, you know, that. As far as I understand.
It's like a fun class. Maybe we should think about having a class like that at Berkeley.
Is there anything that strikes your mind which can be better today?
Well, certainly we see today a lot of challenges for the society in the United States. So I think trying to address our societal challenges that with technology, I think that's a big challenge. For example, social media, the media, just in general, new media, how do we ensure that people are not misled? I mean, there's how do you identify if something is truly the fact, truth?
Right.
How do you ensure that people's voices are equally heard? Right. How do you know that if somebody says, okay, everybody believes this or has this opinion, how do you know if that's true? So that's a big challenge. I think we need to collaborate with social scientists to understand, as well as, I don't know, the journalists and public policy makers and so on, like to understand how we can improve the situation today where there are a lot of untruths or what do you call it, fake news that, how do you deal with this situation? Because it actually can be very divisive. It is a matter of life and death. People have been killed. Genocide has happened because of social media posts. That's a serious challenge for society that I think technology has played a part in, and technology should play a part in solving it.
My last question, which is, what is your one piece of advice for the younger generation?
All right, there are many younger generations than me, so do you think now maybe students or?
Yes, you can go ahead.
Students?
Students.
Yes, I think that, I hope that students, generally have an optimistic view of the future. I think, think of, I always tell students that they have more power than they realize. They have the power to shape the future, their future. So if they're concerned about their future, they should actually be looking to learn and to gain the skills so that they can change the future, right? The future is not set. So that's why I think it's so rewarding to work in a university, because you can teach students and give them the skills to enable them to go on and do great things that will change the world. But so basically, I think just to have an optimistic outlook, you will be happier, and then people will be happier to work with you if you're an optimist, and you want to do something that ultimately will benefit more than just yourself, right? So always be optimistic. Care about others, develop empathy and understanding of others, because that way you can understand what the challenges are for engineers to solve in the future, but also be an effective team player and team leader. And learning is a lifelong process. So always look for opportunities to learn, to go beyond your comfort zone, just to learn and try something new every day. I think that way life will be more interesting and rewarding for you, and you will have greater impact ultimately if you have that kind of outlook on life.
Yeah, fantastic piece of advice, deeply impactful. Before we conclude our session today, this is a question that I ask everyone, which is not already documented there. Is there anything that I didn't ask you but you wanted to share?
No, I think you've asked a lot of good questions, Mohammed. So really appreciate this opportunity to engage with you in conversation. And I hope all of the listeners, have gained a little bit of insight into what it takes to have a happy and impactful life. And I really wish everyone the best. We all are looking forward to a brighter future, brighter times ahead. After the pandemic has passed. And looking forward to continuing to contribute to that.
Thank you for attending this IEEE EDS-sponsored podcast. To listen to other EDS podcasts, as well as benefits and resources EDS offers, please go to the website eds.ieee.com. www.ecosystemsforlife.org. Thank you for listening.